Usually on New Year's Eve, I like to give an inspirational talk, send people home brimming with optimism and hope for the new year, talking perhaps about resolutions and intentions and so on and so forth. But tonight I thought I would revert back to my favorite topic, the breath. And of course, how many times over the last year have we talked about the breath and how when we really learn to pay attention to the breath and understand the breath and follow the Buddha's instructions for breath meditation, that the whole practice opens up for us, and not only the whole practice, but all of the Dharma and all of our lives, because really within the practice of breath meditation, we can learn everything that we need to learn about our minds, our bodies. I mean, it's all right here, right? We don't necessarily give the breath its due. We don't necessarily, as the Buddha said, have respect for concentration, but it's such an interesting, fascinating, and of course important element of the Dharma. It really is the root of the Dharma, as the Buddha said. So one of the things that we know, that we begin to notice, I should say, as we practice the breath meditation, and that as we notice as we go on, and as we go on, we're really asked to notice it more and more and more clearly. Because, you know, as we keep paying attention to the breath and our relationship to it and our relationship to the practice, we understand it more and more. It's not something that we're ever going to master. I mean, every element of it I find incredibly new every time I meditate, every day that I meditate, really. Yeah. So we sort of have to have that quality of interest if we're going to go far in this practice. What we notice, if we pay attention, is how strong the pull is of thinking. You know, we all know how hard it is to stay with the breathing, right? It really is interesting if you look at how strong the pull is, how seductive the thinking is, how we're just pulled away by those thoughts so easily. And it's something that's really important to see, because we tend kind of to underestimate the power of the thinking, you know, and our tendency to chase after the thinking, our tendency to want to get involved with the thinking and how much we want to get involved with it. So it's really important to see that. It's really important to see that, to really see how powerful the thinking is and how strong our tendency is to think in the directions that we think, how deep those ruts are. Because it's one good way to think about our thinking. It's these deep ruts in the mind. So we have to see this. The Buddha called this seeing the allure of the thinking, seeing how we're seduced by the thinking. It's like any time, you know, if you're in battle, you know, we'll go into some military metaphors here, you know. It's like you need to know the strength of your opponent. You don't want to underestimate the strength of your opponent, if you will. So we have to see the allure, how strong the pull is. And we have to begin to start to ask, you know, is it useful to be chasing after these thoughts? You know, because if we don't start bringing some insight to what's going on and some understanding to what's going on, we're going to keep doing it. So is it useful to be chasing after these thoughts? Is it in my best interests? Is it serving me? Is chasing after these thoughts the most loving and compassionate thing I can do? That's what we mean when we say, is it useful or is it skillful? Is it the most loving and compassionate thing I can do, chasing after these thoughts? Is it leading me to happiness or is it leading me to suffering? I mean, these are questions that we don't tend to ask in general, right? You know, when we take action, you know, we take action as we go throughout the course of the day. Physical action, verbal action, mental action, thinking as we go throughout the course of the day. Do we ask, is this useful? Is this serving me? Or do we just follow, just allow ourselves to be pulled away, pulled away, pulled away? So we have to see the pull of the breath, We have to see whether or not the breath is useful. We have to see the thinking is useful. We have to see the pull of the thinking and to see whether or not the thinking is useful. Most of the time we're going to see that it isn't. And we have to see that there's an alternative. Because if there's no alternative, then, well, we're sort of stuck with this. So we have to see that there's an alternative. And of course, the alternative that the teachings offer us first and foremost is the breath. Not just the breath, but an easeful breath. And this is why it's so important to cultivate an easeful breath, a pleasurable breath. So we begin to see that there's an alternative to chasing off after these thoughts. And we begin to see that maybe the pull of those thoughts isn't so strong. Maybe we're less likely to get pulled away to go into those ruts. Another thing, if we start to notice really carefully when we pay attention to the breath, is that, you know, when we come to the breath and into the present moment, we tend to notice this as we start to go a little bit deeper in the meditation. There tends to be this quality of anxiety when we're present. There tends to be this quality of anxiety, which is sort of characterized by, let me get out of here. I really don't want to be here. I don't really want to be present. And why is that? Because it's not familiar. It's like, I want to be involved with these thoughts. You know, when we come to the breath, we're letting go of our familiar moorings. So see that, you know? It's like, oh no, I have to, right? You know that, right? Oh, I have to think that. I have to think that. I know it's causing me incredible suffering, but I have to think about it. I know it's making me miserable, and there's no reason to talk about it, but you don't understand. I have to think about it. As the Buddha said, you know, we chase off, you know, we delight in these thoughts, even though they cause us great suffering. So we develop this easeful breath, this very easeful breath, so we're not hanging there in this place of nothingness. We're in this place of ease, well-being, a place of refuge. So when we go to the breath and make this effort to keep the breath in mind, it's said that we're going against the grain. We're going against the stream. You know, we're going against the grain, and that's why we feel this anxiety, and that's why it's so difficult. Why is it so difficult? Sit here, feel the breath. Really hard, right? Why is it so difficult? Because we're going against the grain. We're going against the stream. We're going against our habitual ways of doing things. Most of the time, most of us, dare I say, are thinking, 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 thinking. Thoughts come up and we just chase, chase, chase. So we're, that's, and, you know, when we have these ingrained routines of thinking, you know, these routines of thinking that are so familiar. So when we're seeking to abandon that thinking, we're going against the grain. We're going against the stream. This is the practice of the Dharma. This is the Dharma. We're going against the grain. We're going against the stream. The Buddha said, I'm living in the ways of the world. I have all these things that I'm meant to have, possessions and sense pleasures and status and praise. And, you know, is this really the way to happiness? Well, let me see. You know, the way to happiness that he found, the way to a true happiness that he found, went against the grain of what everybody else was doing. The Dharma is a practice of going against the stream. Now, the Buddha said, you know, there's three elements of the process. You know, one, you can go along with the world. You know, you can go along with the grain, go along with the stream, just like the way we go along with our thoughts, we can go along with the world and look for happiness in sense pleasures, look for happiness in amusements, look for happiness in possessions, status. And that's easy to do. I mean, it's easy to chase after the thoughts, right? It's easy to go. That's so easy. That's, if I sat here and said, think, everybody would do that really well, right? Everybody would have no problem. We'd have 100% success rate. I'd be the best teacher ever. Just think. You know, but that's not what we say. We say you've got to do something different. You know, you've got to do something different. It's easy to follow the way of the world. It's easy to do what everybody else is doing. It's easy to look for happiness and pleasure and in possessions and to do what everybody else is doing. There's great suffering in it, but it's easy to do. And then the Buddha said, well, then the next kind of person makes an effort to go against the grain, and he does it with tears on his face, because it's hard. It's hard to sit here and meditate. It's hard to go against the grain. But if we stay with it and learn to practice skillfully, we come to this place, the third element, the third place of great happiness. This is the practice. This is the Dharma, going against the grain, going against the stream. Now, the ways of the world are the ways of conformity. You know, most people follow a very conformist life, follow a very routinized way of living. We have our job and our routine day after day after day after day after day. You know, we have our relationship or not, you know, and it's like, any married people here, you know, it's like, you know, any people in relationships, you know, it's like we're in the relationship and, you know, I'm sure everybody's at different levels on the scale, but it's the same routine day after day after day after day. You know, so we sort of live this life of, man, it's the same thing day after day. See, now it's getting to be a real New Year's Eve talk. It's the same thing day after day after day, you know. And there's this quality of dissatisfaction or despair in that, right? What Thoreau called quiet desperation. The mass of men live lives of quiet desperation. So what do we do? What do we do? We have this life that's so routine and we follow the same pattern day after day after day after day after day. So what do? We look for some satisfaction. We look for some happiness. Most of us, most people, maybe the 30 people here tonight are the exceptions, but most of us, moi included, you know, look for happiness in amusements, entertainments. This is how we seek to find satisfaction in our lives. This is just food for thought. This is just food for thought. Seek to find happiness and satisfactions. Well, I had a crappy day, the same thing again and again. Let me turn on the TV tonight and maybe this TV show will bring some juice to this life of mine. Maybe this TV show, what is it, Breaking Bad? That's going to be where I'm going to find... 2013 was a great year. Breaking Bad hit it out of the park in 2013, right? Great year for movies. What a year this was. You know? Sports. You know, it's like, you know, it's like how many days? Oh, same thing. Oh, the only thing that's going to pull me through is the Mets game. You know, I mean, that shows you how desperate we are. You know, but all these amusements that we look for to find satisfaction in our lives. I mean, this is sort of the way of the world. You have to see for yourself where you are. You know, with this, I know where I am, and it oftentimes isn't so pretty. You know, the internet. The phone thing, right? It's like that's why everybody's going to it all the time. If they were in a state of bliss all the time, they wouldn't be constantly looking at the phone. Yeah, the world puts incredible, the culture puts incredible emphasis. This is the conformist way of living in which we live these lives that are dull and routinized because we just go through the same pattern day after day, and we look for some kind of amusement and happiness in these entertainments. So we put tremendous emphasis on these entertainments. Now, that to me is pretty obvious if you look at what we pay movie stars and athletes. You know, it's not their fault that they're making millions and millions of dollars. We're willing to give it to them. You know, it's like Robinson Cano. This has got nothing to do with him. $240 million to play baseball? I played all my life for free. You know? It's like that says something, you know, that's wrong with us. It's not wrong with him. It's not wrong with baseball. It's something that's wrong with us. If we place that much value, you know, it's like I'm going to get a little jolt out of him hitting a triple in the bottom of the ninth inning. So the Seattle wins a game. Yeah, that's worth about $6 million to me. You know, I mean, how fucked up are we? You know, I mean, come on. This is the way of the world. So the question, of course, and we like to pose questions. You know, the question is, are we going to conform? Are we going to conform? Are we going to be conformists? Are we going to follow the ways of the world? Are we going to give in to the pull, just to follow? Because it's the same pull that you're following when you're following the breath. Are you going to give in to that pull? Are you going to give in to that anxiety that comes? Maybe I'll try to change. You know, that's what happens, right? This is going to be the year I'm going to change. But what happens is you get pulled away again, right? Just like you get pulled away by the breath. And then there's that little anxiety. Well, let me try something new. No, I can't do that, you know? I mean, why does that happen? Because, you know, that's the mind. And that's why this year, and I'm suggesting everybody in the group do it, and everybody, all the group members on Thursday night, you know, have to come up with a 6-month plan to do something over the next 6 months that's fairly significant, that's loving and compassionate towards yourself. Could be going on a vacation, starting an exercise program, could be anything. You know, but that's not just something that we're going to say we're going to do. We're going to use our skills. You know, we've developed skills so that we can do things to begin to change, to begin to live a different kind of life. And that we're going to work with each other because we have to do it together. So are we going to continue to look for satisfaction, happiness, and amusements? Can we do better? Can we do better? I mean, this is really the question, right? Is this how you're going to measure your happiness in life? By, you know, the TV shows and the movies that you see, you know, the possessions that you make, the possessions that you get, the status that you attain. I mean, can't we do better than that? Shouldn't this human life have greater satisfaction? I mean, that was what the Buddha asked. He had all that stuff. I mean, he had entertainments. I mean, the seventh precept is to refrain from entertainments when you're following the Upasatha. Yeah. So, can we do better? Can we do better? Can we find a greater happiness in this life? Can human life be more satisfying? I mean, that's what the Dharma is about. We have this human life. We have this mind, this body. How can we make the most out of it? How can we make the most out of it? There's tremendous potential in the human heart. Tremendous potential. So as Dharma students, if you really want to be Dharma students, you know, it's all about ultimately looking at the ways, the tendencies that we have to conform. It starts by looking at the breath and the tendency we have to get pulled away. It's the same thing. As Dharma students, we look at the ways and the tendencies we have to conform. And it's not about anti-technology. This isn't an anti-internet talk. This is an anti-conformity talk. This is an anti-conformity talk. There's nothing wrong with technology. There is, I would submit to you, something unsatisfactory about conforming, you know? It's a talk about not settling. It's like, you know, among other things, in terms of my personal history that are well documented, it's well documented that this year I finally got a cell phone, you know. And for years I didn't have a cell phone, and it wasn't because I was anti-technology. I mean, I had computers in the 80s. I didn't want to conform. You know, it's like, fuck, I'm not doing what everybody else is doing. You know, sometimes you just got to take a stand, you know. I mean, to me that was really valuable. I mean, that way I wasn't going to sell my soul, you know. I mean, I don't really have much use for it, and I don't really use it, but, you know, it's like, I'm not going to conform. You know, those kinds of little gestures can be important sometimes. I'm not going to do what everybody else is doing it just because they're doing it. That's not a good enough reason for me. I'm not going to do it just because, you know, all the commercials say that I should do it. I'm not going to do it because I'm going to be the only one who doesn't do it if I don't do it. You know, God forbid that on New Year's Eve I talk about renunciation, but it is one of the skillful qualities. You know, it's one of the most important skillful qualities. And as a skillful quality, it's something that we do out of love. mean, that's a definition of a skillful quality. It's something that we do out of love and our compassion for ourselves so that we can find a greater happiness. So if we talk about making an effort this year to moderate our intake of amusements, you know, that's something that we do out of love and compassion for ourselves. Because really what we vow to do not, is not just moderate our intake of amusements and entertainments, but to, in turn, look for some other kind of happiness, to begin to explore. Is there some other kind of happiness? Is that kind of happiness available to me? What do I need to do to find that kind of happiness? You know, so renunciation, we like to talk about as a skillful trade. As my teacher says, trading candy for gold. You know, we make an effort to look less and less for happiness in the ways of the world. Saying, you know what, I can do better. Or I'm going to start to look anyway. You know, it's like, this is what it's about. It's not about me saying, stop using that damn phone and try to find a greater happiness. It's about me saying, at least look and see if there's a greater happiness. Okay? You know, we don't tell you what to do, but we do try to help you find a greater happiness in your life by showing you how to look for yourself and see for yourself what leads to a greater happiness for yourself. That's all. That's all. We don't want you to settle. We want you to be happy. The pull is so strong. You know, I wrote in the book, there's a little piece in the book about my book, Commercial, about how, you know, I would go to my friends' houses and I would see their flat screen TV and I would go, I gotta get that. You know, and it would be just like this feeling and like, I gotta get that. If I get that, I'll be happy. So I haven't given in yet on the flat screen. So I was walking down 14th Street yesterday to get the stuff for tonight's refreshments, you know, and walked by PC Richard. I was like, I almost broke my neck looking through the window at the flat screen TVs. I was like, oh my God, look at that. I gotta get. I was like, I had to laugh, you know? It's like the pull is so strong. The pull is so strong. If I get one of those, I'll be happy. If I'll get one of those, I'll be happy. We look for a greater happiness, the happiness of the heart that comes from really seeing for ourselves what leads us to being able to fulfill our wish to be happy, you know? And we do that with each other. We can't do that alone. We can't do that alone. You know, ultimately, we're looking for the happiness inside, the happiness of the heart. So it is a practice about being a nonconformist, seeing the direction the culture is going in, the television, the phone, the internet, and asking, just asking, where is this taking me? Am I living like an automaton? Am I just following the cultural dogma? Now, that's said to be living in a dream or living in a deluded way, not questioning what am I doing and is what I'm doing leading me to true happiness. That's the Buddhist definition of ignorance. And beginning to start to take actions that come from the heart, not from what the culture is dictating we should do in order to find happiness. We begin to start to take actions little by slowly that come from us having discernment, understanding what is an action that we can take that's informed by self-love, that's going to lead us to a greater happiness, a true happiness, and taking those actions. I like to say that discernment is seeing what we have to do to find greater happiness. So that's discernment. That's the opposite of ignorance. Ignorance is just going along with the flow. Discernment is looking for ourselves, and you know, those are skills that we have to develop. You know, it requires concentration. It requires stillness, tranquility, equanimity, these qualities that we develop in breath meditation. But discernment is seeing what we have to do to find greater happiness, and love is doing it. So conformity is antithetical to love. It's antithetical, and as long as we conform and just do what everybody else is doing, we're never going to be able to love. We're never going to be able to love ourselves. We're never going to be able to love others. because we won't be acting from the heart. We'll just be acting based on what others have said. We'll just be acting by just following our habitual ways of doing things. Just following and following. I mean, I had the same. I mean, I'm not like some guy who just woke up, you know, at age 15 and was a Dharma teacher. You know, it's like I worked the same job for 20 years and I didn't like it. You know, but oh, this is a good job. It's in publishing. I'm making a lot of money. Well, not a lot of money. I'm making some money. You know, a little bit of perks, a few nice possessions. Oh, this is great. Yeah. I don't know. That's what I thought you were supposed to do. And then it's like one day, it's like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Start to think for myself. So it all starts by paying attention to the breathing. It all starts by paying attention to your breath. You know, instead of letting those thoughts pull you away. You know, that's the mind saying, do this, think this. The same thing as the culture saying, do this. Instead of letting those thoughts pull you away, you say, no, 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 no. I'm going to look and see if that's really useful. Is it really leading me to happiness, following those thoughts? You know what? I don't think it is. I'm going to come back to the breath because I think that's what's best for me. That's taking charge of your own life. That's how you begin to learn to start to take charge of your own life, to begin to shape your life. You know, we shape our lives in a way that's determined by what we need to do to love ourselves, not by following what the world says we need to do in order to be happy. We seek to do what we need to do in support of our wish to be happy.